Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, hey, welcome to Playboys episode 8. Alex, how are you doing?
Doing all right. Glad to be here again. How about yourself?
Delicate, not too bad. Which play are we doing today?
We are doing Othello.
I like to ask that, even though everyone can already see the episode name. So they already know. But yes, we're doing Othello, The Mirror of Venice. Before we kind of get into it, you know, with the characters and the acts and things, like, overall kind of thoughts? Like, I really liked this one.
Yeah. This is my third time going through it. I went through it in high school, went through it again last year, doing the rankings of the tragedies, and then just yesterday, reading it for this podcast. And yeah, I think each time I've really enjoyed going through it. It's nice to see it again, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've read this one before, and I think it got a lot. I mean, I read all of Shakespeare, like, in a row within a few months, so a lot of them kind of got lost in the mix a little bit, you know. But now that I've gone back and kind of read this one standalone, I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't remember that it was, like, one of my favorites or anything like that, but I really enjoyed it. Where did you rank it? Remind me, where did you rank it in your tragedies? It's pretty high, right?
Oh, yeah. I ranked it at number 3. Followed by number 2 would be King Lear and 1 Hamlet. So I can see people putting it in the 1 or 2 spot as well. Yeah, it definitely deserves to be top 3.
I think that's fair. King Lear I never really enjoyed either, but it might have also got lost in the mix. I don't know. Hamlet, of course, is a classic, and we reviewed that, so listen to our Hamlet episode. So, Othello... you know what's interesting on this is there's really not very many characters in this, and I quite like that. Some of the dramatis personae, like, it's half a page of people. This is like 6 people. Well, there's a little bit more than that, but
they add maybe like 5 people that are there for just a single scene. So you got like the clown who's there for a scene, you got the duke who's there for a scene, Montana who's there for 2 scenes. Like, yeah, everyone else is there throughout most of the play.
Yeah, it's a little core. So I suppose we have Othello himself. That's the person to start with. Othello, a noble Moor in the service of the Venetian state. Okay, so they send him at one point off to do some, you know, kind of, well, yep. there's trouble. So off you go, Othello, you're a general or whatever. So that's what he does. We have his lieutenant, Cassio, and his ancient Iago, honest Iago. So that's, people will have heard, I think, you know, of Iago. And those are like really a core kind of 3. And in terms of other characters, I mean, we have have Othello's wife, obviously, which is Desdemona, and her dad, Brabantio. But we only really see him like maybe at the start and the end. Like he's not like in it throughout.
At the end, we get some news about him.
Yes, we get some news about him.
He is only at the beginning,
but he's only in the beginning. And we have Emilia, who is Iago's wife, and Bianca, who is Cassio's mistress. So, like, essentially, we have 3 people and their spouses, you know, and that is, like, the core, you know, cast of people. In terms of who else appears, you mentioned Montano, that's the governor of Cyprus, and we have the Duke of Venice as well. He, again, is really only in the beginning. And, of course, Desdemona's dad, Brabantio, that we mentioned. And we have Roderigo, a Venetian gentleman. And again, he kind of bookends it. He's in the start, he's in the end. He's talking to Iago at the beginning. And that's...
He pops up throughout. He's the one who gets the play going at each spot. So when there's a lot of talking and there's a lot of like conniving going on, Rodrigo's the one who kind of puts things into action.
Yeah, he does. He is he's a mover in that sense. And then in terms of others, you know, it literally just says here, you know, other senators, you know, there's the Klein that you mentioned. And we do have the brother and also a kinsman of Urbantios. That's Gratiano and Lodovico. But
yeah, he was the uncle.
Yeah, not really major characters there. So No. It is a small set of core characters. And I, for one, think we could have lost the Klein, to be perfectly honest.
Which one?
The Klein.
Yes. That really surprised me. I forgot that there was even a clown in this play.
Yeah. It's, look, this is the one thing that's similar in this play and the last one we did is that there's a random scene with a clown that could have been cut. I'm going to be honest. It didn't add anything.
I kind of agree. Yeah, with Elbow being the clown and Measure for Measure.
Yeah.
Clown here. No, I mean, you're comparing them to like the clown in Twelfth Night or the clown in King Lear. And yeah, they don't really, they make you laugh for a couple lines and that's about it. Then they just disappear.
Yeah. And, you know, in my case, like, I didn't laugh. Like, I didn't find it funny. I kind of thought, why is this even here? But, you know, one thing is, it's weird to put it because this is not a comedy. Like, this is a tragedy and it's just a weird comedic scene. But there's something I noticed, and tell me if I've made this up or if you noticed it as well. This, in terms of the plot, this could have been a comedy. Like, you know, if they just made it a little bit less serious, obviously the ending, you know, you've got a tragic ending where everyone kind of dies and a comic ending where they're all fine and they all go off and get married. But
I think you're thinking of Much Ado About Nothing. That is literally the plot of Much Ado About Nothing.
Okay, I haven't read that one in a long time, but yeah, there we go. Because I felt like, you know, this plot could have been done as a comedy, and there we go. So it was good.
basically. Although done better as a comedy. For my ranking of comedies, Much Ado About Nothing was my number one. So
yeah,
that holds a special place in my heart. And the Royal Shakespeare Company, just amazing job. The best I've seen. Anyway.
Fair enough.
We're here to talk about Othello. So
we're going to talk about Othello. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So it starts off in Venice and it starts off quick. Like, we get to hear immediately why Iago and Rodrigo do not like Othello, and right off with their motive and right off with what they're going to do, right? So Rodrigo loves Desdemona, and Iago is just incredibly jealous of Cassio getting promoted over him, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, I didn't really find Iago's motivation all that believable, to be honest.
Oh, no, yeah, and that's something I thought of before as well. Like, you want to get back at someone? You want to get revenge on someone just for not getting a promotion?
Yeah, and he, you know, we'll see, but he takes it to some lengths, you know.
It is a tragedy, and what does a tragedy mean when we're talking about Shakespeare? Well, add one and two together, you get three.
Yeah, I mean, Shakespeare essentially does, to a point, follow the ancient Greek style. You know, you've got comedies and you've got tragedies, and they take a certain kind of route, and it's interesting that held up for such a long time. But yeah,
so yeah, you got Iago in the shadow throughout most of this play. Rodrigo's kind of the one in the spotlight. Like, he's the one who wakes up Brabantio, he's the one who like gets Cassio mad at him to have him beat him, basically, right? Iago's just in the shadow, like, talking into Rodrigo's ear throughout all of this.
Yeah, I think we do see a lot of Iago, but I think that we also, like, he's almost, you kind of feel like he's there all the time, you know, like he's always in the shadow. He is the real, in a sense, he is the main character more than Othello, even. Like, I think he's the one that you take away from the play. Honest Iago, you know, that's the guy that you remember, you know. As soon as I looked at the dramatis persona and I saw Iago, I thought, ah, yes, it's this one. You know, that's the guy that stays with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those are the two that are going to come out at the end for the curtain call. You got Othello and Iago who are probably going to take a bow together.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So,
do you like Iago?
I think he is, as I said, very conniving, but it's his motive that is just really weak. I think that's the only weakness in this play, is kind of Iago's motive.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I think that he's an amazing character, but I would agree that I didn't really get his motive. You know, I kind of thought he, you know, Othello considers him like a faithful, loyal, honest friend, and he's kind of,
Yeah.
you know, going against him for what seemed like a silly reason, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it is really cool to see how he works throughout this play. I was thinking of how to discuss Iago earlier, and I can only see him as like a cancer, right? You don't know whether this part of you, or how should I say this? You don't really know if he's going to be good or bad. He's part of like the group, part of the body, but you realize later in the play, like, oh, this part of me is killing me. If you just chopped him off earlier, then things might have been better.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think an apt comparison, you know, and that is what Iago is. He is the cancer, essentially, and he is the one that's, let's be honest, he causes all the problems, you know,
Oh,
all
yeah.
of the problems.
Well,
And
I would say that he gets the ball moving. Othello also, he's not entirely innocent in this.
I was really torn on Othello because I feel like you're meant to really like him, but I
Yeah.
wasn't. He's not great.
I think I do still like him. I do still like him, but yeah, he does turn on Desdemona a little too quickly.
He does, and I mean, I'll come back to this later when we get to it, but
Yeah.
the whole play would fall apart if people just had like a normal conversation. Like if they
Yeah.
just said, okay, what's going on? Okay, that thing happened, you know, but they don't. If he
So
just
yeah,
spoke to Desdemona, you know?
you have Cassio just like coming in, talking to Desdemona, and then leaving without talking to Othello. Like, no, you should just be a man, talk to Othello, and
Yeah,
right.
or if Othello just had a real conversation with Cassio and Desdemona, or you know, he goes on accusing Desdemona at one point, and then she doesn't really answer that. She's just like, "Well, I guess he's mad at me. Oh, well." Like if we just sat down and had a little conversation, everything would have worked out, you know?
So for Desdemona as a character, I see her as kind of like the ideal woman in their eyes, I should say, like Elizabethan eyes. Like she is completely to subservient, right? She will do anything that Othello asks. And yeah, so when he says go away, she doesn't question it. She just shuts up and
And I
goes
think,
away.
you know, for people studying this now, we have to kind of be aware that that's maybe not going to sit so well with us now. But I think back then, you know, that was considered like a good wife. That's what she should be doing. You know, you're supposed to, yeah, you have pity for her, obviously, to an extent, but that was like the model wife, essentially, that level of
Yeah.
subservience. Whereas nowadays, it's kind of like, this is a bit toxic.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But what's also kind of a strike against Desdemona is how much she talks about Cassio. Like, imagine being in a relationship and then your wife always talks about this other man, right? I think she should also be able to like read the room and be like, all right, I should probably not bring this up every single conversation that we have. Because it really is most of the conversation she has in this play. It's about
She's always
Cassio.
talking about Cassio, but I mean, I guess she promised Cassio that she would speak to Othello on his behalf, so she wants to do that. But yeah, she pushes it a
Yeah.
little bit, and yeah, maybe that's a flaw in just how she's written, but I don't know. I feel like she didn't really have much else going on other than talking about Cassio sometimes, you
I mean,
know?
from her point of view, absolutely it would make sense because, right, we do learn that Cassio was the intermediary between Othello and Desdemona's relationship. Like he was the one to get them started, basically.
Yeah, and you
So.
know, it's not, I don't know, like, yeah, you should maybe read the room a little bit and figure out that Othello's not mad keen on her really being into Cassio. But at the same time, I don't see why she shouldn't be. Like, it
Yeah.
shouldn't be a problem, you know. But again, for nowadays, you know, if your wife had a male friend, that'd be grand. I don't know how keen they were on that in Elizabethan times, you know.
Fair enough. So,
So
where do
let's
we want
start
to
off.
start
We
plot-wise?
I was going to say, like, we kind of briefly mentioned how the play begins, but it begins with Iago and Rodrigo hatching their scheme, essentially.
Yep. They're waking up Desdemona's father, Brabantio, saying, like, hey, your daughter's run off with this Moor. you need to stop this.
Right? Yeah, I mean, they say you've been robbed, essentially. You know, you've been robbed of your daughter. You know, she's gone and married the Murr, who, of course, it took me a scene or two to realize what was going on with Iago, because, you know, he is the servant, essentially, or the friend of Othello. So I was kind of trying to figure out what was going on with him in the first scene or two. Why is he, you know, going against Othello here? Because actually, I thought maybe this is some kind of scheme that Othello had employed him in to, like, make the dad aware in a weird way. But no, it's not. He's just not being a good friend.
Oh, no. He never does anything nice for Othello throughout this entire play.
No.
Yeah. And so I didn't really get confused by that. I do actually like a line in here. I think it was Brabantio saying to Rodrigo, "Thou art a villain." And Rodrigo responding, "You are a senator."
Yes, I was going to say, "Thou art a villain, you are a senator." It's right there. Yeah, I love that, actually.
That is one of my favorites.
It's fair.
Yeah, yeah. So some of these jokes really do, like, last for, like, 400 years. And then, yeah, so a lot of, kind of tying it into what you were saying, a lot of what we're seeing does still tie into what we see in today's age. So, like, there, if you really read into it, you can see a lot of, like, racist things that they're saying at the very beginning about being a Moor. Iago says some terrible things as well, and so
yeah, that there's some stuff like that might not sit well with everyone reading. But I, you know, I always think that if you're going to appreciate a piece of literature, you know, you have to just accept the time that it's from, you know. So, like,
and it's not nearly as bad as some things from, like, the 1800s or 1900s.
Yeah, it's actually not as bad as a lot more modern stuff, actually. So yeah, you have to overlook certain things. It's just the way it is. You know? But yeah, the senator line is very funny, and they wake up Brabantio, and of course they then explain, you know, your daughter has gone. He doesn't believe them at first because he doesn't trust Rodrigo anyway, because I guess Rodrigo was trying to get with Desdemona previously. So he's kind of like, "Oh, you're up to your usual tricks," and he's like, no, I'm telling you that your daughter has gone." And they say, you know, "Go and check, satisfy yourself. If she be in her chamber or your house, let loose on me the justice of the state for thus deluding you." So, you know, that's fair. Yeah, she's not there. And he does go and check that. And then all of a sudden, from not liking Rodrigo, Brabantio was like, "You're my best friend," you know, and they just get on really well then at that point.
Well, he was basically saying, like, "Okay, I'd rather have you, Rodrigo, than this Moor."
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't like, again, it doesn't sit well with me, the way they refer to her, like, as a thing, you know. It's like, "You've been robbed." And he says, like, "Oh, thou foul thief, where hast thou stowed my daughter?" Like, she's not an object that you just picked up and hidden somewhere. Like, this is an actual person with agency.
Yeah. But again, the time period, I didn't see too much more wrong with that time period wise.
Yeah,
I kind of accepted it at this point.
You do accept it, yeah. But it's almost funny, you know, because it's ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Absolutely, yeah. And so basically then Brabantio shows up to Othello, who's getting his order from the Duke to come meet him. Brabantio tries to arrest Othello, like, "Okay, you stole my daughter." And
yeah, you stole you stole my possession known as a living human being. And yeah,
yep.
But you know, talk about Brabantio for a second, because he can't even consider, not that he can't accept, he can't even consider that she was just into Othello. Like, he assumes that Othello's used, like, some kind of magic, or like she's been under a spell, like this witchcraft involved. Like,
yeah, it's like African witchcraft or something they mention. And
yeah, he's really like, that is the assumption here. You know, if she in chains of magic were not bound, whether a maid so tender, fair and happy, so opposite to marriage that she shunned the wealthy. So there's this idea, like, well, she's shunned better people than you. You know, she couldn't possibly love Othello, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't even consider it.
Yeah. And we learn in the next scene, basically, that the reason she loves Othello is because of his amazing stories, right? So yeah. They do go and meet the Duke, because, like, the Duke's orders take precedence. And so in the next scene, we see that the Duke is planning to fight the Turks, and they have a ton of ships. It's looking pretty desperate, and so they need to send, like, Othello to war.
Yeah.
But Brabantio doesn't care about that. Only thing he cares about is saying Othello stole my daughter.
He's quite rash with the Duke. Like, yeah. You know, he speaks out of turn a little bit with the Duke. You know, he's not afraid of the Duke.
Not at all. Not at all. And so
he says, so because the Duke's trying to figure out what goes on at one point, you know, and he figures out it's about his daughter, and he says, is she dead? And he says, aye, to me. Like, she's not dead. She's not dead to you. She just married someone. She is abused, stolen from me, and corrupted by spells and medicines bought of mountebanks. You know, like, okay. He doesn't even, like, the way he says it to the Duke, it's almost like we've already worked out that there were spells and medicines here. Like, he doesn't even say, this is just my supposition, you know?
But the Duke, being a smart guy, is like, okay, we need some evidence for this.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably one of the first times I've seen in Shakespeare, like, give us actual evidence.
Yeah, and it's curious, but the Duke's quite a level-headed, you know, fellow. Yeah. And for that reason, we don't actually see much of him in the play, because he's almost out of place in this play. No one else is really all that level-headed.
Yeah, yeah.
And... But Brabantio tries to describe his daughter as being, you know, a maiden never bold, of spirit so still and quiet that her motion blushed at herself. Like, this is the perfect girl. You know, this cute little afraid of everything, blushing at men kind of, you know, how could she possibly run off with Othello, you know, which is hilarious.
And so we get actually, yeah, some of Othello's backstory here, that he's been a fighter since he was a boy. He was a slave at some point, but he also was able to buy his own freedom. And so him telling all these stories of like how he was as a kid and his life growing up, like that really just made her fall in love with him.
And look, I guess people fall in love a lot of different ways. Again, maybe I'm just too modern. I wasn't madly happy with the fact that she falls in love with him because he's a manly man. You know, like he's doing all these wars and he's a bit too stereotypically sexist for me, you know?
Okay, I didn't actually get that from it. I mean, there is that part to it, but I also found like, I found some emotion and feeling in it, in that like he was a slave and she can kind of understand like, oh, that must have been real tough for him, and trying to understand what his life was like growing up like that, buying his own freedom, becoming who he is.
You know, I think that's fair, and it's not a massive point that kind of just put me off the play or anything. But I was like, okay, he had to be like a noble warrior. You know, he couldn't have been a pencil pusher, and you know what I mean. Like, yeah,
I think there are plays for that. yeah, not in this case. No, he is.
But
I mean, he is considered a great general, and the Duke really wants to send him off to war, but the Duke has to finish up this stuff with Brabantio first, and he even says, I think this tale would win my daughter too.
Like, yeah, the Duke says that this tale would win my daughter too, so you know. And the Duke is very, you know, he understands people's motivations, and he understands what's, you know, he's like, yeah, that seems fair. Like, I don't think that magic is involved. I think that this guy was really nice and wooed her with his stories, essentially, you know. Which, and Othello says it, like, go and get her, and while you fetch her, I'll just tell you what happens. And then, you know, she comes in and corroborates it, essentially. So there's no, he's not afraid. You know, he knows I'm 100% in the right here. I'm just going to tell you what happens. And I know 100% that she's going to corroborate it. You know, there's no problem here.
And with the Duke there, Brabantio has to reluctantly give his blessing.
He does. He has to reluctantly accept it.
I don't know if it's a... I don't know if I should say, would it be spoiling saying what happened to Brabantio later?
I'll go ahead.
All right. So Brabantio dies of grief because he lost his daughter, basically.
Yes.
This is the last we see of him.
This is the last we see of him, but we hear later that he dies of grief. Yeah. Per Brabantio.
But I do like the Duke's advice to him before he dies, of course. The Duke says, the rob that smiles steals something from the thief. He robs himself that spends a bootless grief. Right?
That's nice.
Crying over spilled milk, right? It's just wasteful. Yeah. Like,
well, yeah, like, she's already married Othello, so there's no point being upset about it now. Like, it's done.
Yeah. And honestly, just, I recommend reading Act 1, Scene 3, just for some beautiful poetry, like, on the Duke's side, and yeah. Not really to do with the plot, but it's just good poetry.
Yeah, it is. And I the Duke's actually my favorite character in the play. Like, he's the only person that I feel is a nice chap. You know, like, I could trust him. He's sensible. He's level-headed. And we don't really... That's him gone. Right? We don't see him again.
I feel like... I don't know. I might... I can see that. I can see that. Emilia might be probably the best moral character. Just
We'll get to that.
Blindsided.
The easily blindsided was a moral failing for me, but we'll get to that in turn. But I suppose we've kind of covered what happens really in Act One. The only thing I wanted to kind of to add was really when Othello talks to the Duke about Iago, and it you know, he mentions and introduces him as his agent, his ancient. But he again, so this is what we hear about Iago. A man he is of honesty and trust. To his conveyance, I assign my wife. So, like, he trusts Iago. He's like, yeah, that's fine. I'm going to go off. My wife needs to follow later. I trust Iago to, like, make these arrangements. Yeah. He trusts him with everything, essentially, you know, down to his wife, which is that. So that's the first time we kind of hear how Othello feels about Iago. He's a trusted, noble chap. You know,
he's the ensign, yeah. And Othello asks Iago to bring his wife to Cyprus.
Now, what do you think? Because what we see of Iago is the opposite of what Othello thinks of him. There's this idea that he's been with him a long time. Like, are we supposed to think that Iago has changed just because of this promotion? Like, was he a noble, lovable servant before?
I think that's what we're supposed to get out of him.
It's hard to buy that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because he's done so well as a villain that you assume he's more or less always been like that, you know?
But what's also interesting, like, we get the ages, too. So Othello, it sounds like he's, like, 50 or so.
Yeah, I thought he was, like, maybe late 40s, early 50s. I can't remember exactly, but he's not.
Like, he even mentions, like, his sex drive is low now, which is a strange thing to say in the play. And we know that Iago's 28. He specifically says his age.
Yeah. So it's well, whatever, but I guess people aged quicker than, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's something in general. Like, I remember even from my own childhood, you know, people in their 50s seem old, and they dressed old, and they acted old, and now they don't. You know, we live in an era now where, like, everyone stays young until they really get old, you know, so.
Which is cultural when you're 51.
Like 70, I don't know. It's a cultural thing.
So there is a little bit more at the end of Act One. We see Rodrigo again, and Rodrigo's saying, oh, I should just kill myself. Desdemona and Othello got married. And then Iago says, don't kill yourself. You can't drown yourself. Drowning is for cats and blind puppies.
Yes, cats and blind puppies.
Wow. Just to see how evil this guy is. I just love that line.
But Iago essentially says, so you're right, you know, tells him not to kill himself, essentially because Iago can use him in a plan, basically.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go back to Kant a little bit here about treating people as means to an end, but Iago essentially treats Rodrigo as a thing, like as a means to an end. He doesn't really treat him as a human in that sense. But
oh, absolutely not. Yeah. He says, like, go sell all your assets, bring a ton of money with you, get like jewels, for example, that you can give to Desdemona. I don't think Desdemona ever gets those jewels. I think Iago takes them.
No, I think Iago takes those. And we get it over and over again. Like, he's a big speech, and every other word is, like, bring money or make money or something like that. Like, that's in the list. It's like, do this thing and money and this thing and money and this thing and money. You know, like, that's very, very emphasized that money is going to be involved.
It happens like three times throughout this play, and Rodrigo just keeps believing him.
Yeah, a little bit gullible, maybe. I don't know how I feel about Rodrigo. I think he's the one character in the play that I don't know. Like, obviously, we don't necessarily like him, but I feel like he was swindled at the very beginning by Iago, and he was used. So I don't want to give him, like, too much culpability, but it's tricky.
I think later on, it goes beyond, like, what is it? It goes beyond disbelief here, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
It does. If you're going to let yourself get constantly swindled, at some point it is partially your own fault.
Yeah. So
are we to think that he just spends all his money on these jewels and then gives them to Iago? Like, he essentially bankrupts himself, just gives all his wealth to Iago, basically.
Yeah, for Iago to give to Desdemona, and then Iago just takes it. And we never see the money. We never see any of this.
We don't. A lot of that happens. This is one of the plays where I feel like more is happening that we're not seeing sometimes, and that's fine. Some plays you feel that way and some you don't. Some plays you feel like this is a very minimalist story and we're seeing every detail of it, you know?
So I feel kind of like, this is a good time to talk about it, I think. This is a very interesting organization of one of Shakespeare's plays. Like, normally, I feel like this type of play with the revenge and the tragedy, this is usually like acts 4 and 5 of his play.
Yeah.
I feel like we are missing acts 1, 2, and 3 leading up to this. But
answer me this. Do you think we could have lost act 1?
There's way too much backstory, way too much motive being talked about. No, we couldn't have lost act 1.
Well, I suppose we would have then had to fill some of that motive and backstory into act 2, but
Brabantio was necessary.
No, like there's definitely some stuff that feels like a prequel almost. Like, it feels like we didn't really need that in the, and this is slightly longer than your average Shakespeare play. And I do feel like a lot of the stuff that happens in act 1, certainly in the first half of it, like, it wasn't really, like, they could have filled that in a paragraph or two, like a summary form. Like, we didn't really need to see all of that. And it was enjoyable, don't get me wrong. I like the play, including act 1. But it is that little bit longer, and I feel like act 1 makes the play flow strangely, as you said. Like, it's not really an opening act in some respects. I find it, we could have lost some of it, you know?
A little bit, yeah. Because, like, the stuff with Brabantio doesn't really go anywhere. We just see one of Iago's plans fail. And, all right, that's fair. We get to see a plan fail. Like, not every plan is going to succeed. But, yeah, it's just interesting to see, because this is all like climax and falling action, I feel. Very little falling action.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I mean, did you think that the play flowed okay in terms of going from act 1 to act 5? Like, it felt a bit off to me.
I think where it felt off was, it seems like they are reiterating the same discussions over and over. I think that's another nitpick I have, in that, all right, Iago is just going to talk to Rodrigo and tell Rodrigo what to do. Then he's going to talk to Othello and say, okay, Othello, I think Desdemona's cheating. And Iago just does his rounds, talking to each person, and then he goes back around and does the same thing. You kind of know what's going to happen in each scene.
Yeah, you do. Like, I think it's predictable, but I don't think that necessarily made it less enjoyable. I should say one thing, though. Yeah, it is. What I really enjoy about Iago is his asides. He's the archetypal villain who says one thing to you know, and then turns aside to the audience, and it's one of those, you suspend your disbelief that the character 2 feet from him isn't obviously still hearing him, but it's a theater, you know. But I love that. He's the archetype for doing that. Like, I'm going to say a nice thing to your face, I'm going to turn aside to the audience or to myself, or I don't know, and then just say the opposite of that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think he's very interesting when he's on stage. There's always something happening in his mind. He'd be a very interesting character to play, I think.
Oh yeah, I think he would be a lot of fun to play. I would love to see. I've not seen really that many Shakespeare's actually produced. I've only read them. I think this is one I would like to see, you know, just for Iago, really.
Oh yeah. And actually, plugging Royal Shakespeare Company again, they had made a very interesting version with Iago. They actually made Iago black as well.
Right.
Yeah. And it gives an even, I feel like at first, like, just basic foundation level, that wouldn't really work. But when you actually look into it, it creates an even deeper connection between the two. It's kind of like, this guy was able to succeed and I wasn't. But also, even like, I know my place better than this guy. It just makes for a real interesting interactions between the two of them.
Yeah. That's an interesting take on it, actually. Like, it, I do feel like it changes the play a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But that's fine. You know, sometimes you can make changes like that, and it doesn't, the story is certainly not going to suffer for it. It adds something. It doesn't take anything away, you know?
I think in this one, it does add a little bit, but yeah, it's maybe watching two different versions would probably
help. Yeah, I guess. Let me make it explicitly clear, because I'm not sure if I have this idea, this plot surrounding Rodrigo. You know, obviously he's giving jewels to Iago to pass on to Desdemona, and I mean, they use the word cuckold once or twice. Like, the idea is Iago is going to, you know, I guess it's obvious, but just to clearly state it, Iago is going to facilitate, you know, bringing Rodrigo and Desdemona together, basically.
Yeah.
As his young mistress or whatever. Like, so that's the plan as far as Rodrigo is concerned, and that's really all he's interested in for the play. That's the plot as far as he's concerned.
Yeah, and he says later on, like, he's given so many jewels that even a nun would fall for him, basically.
Yeah, because that's what we know about people, is if you just give them shiny things, that's how you win love.
Yes.
That's all we know. So, do you want to talk a little bit about Cassio? Because so, he becomes relevant next.
He does become relevant starting in, what is it, Act 2, Scene 3, yeah. So Cassio's the one who gets the promotion instead of Iago. And, yeah, there is a little bit that we might have to cover before we get to Cassio. So, like, Act 2, Scene 1, basically, like, everyone arrives in Cyprus. We learn that there was a huge storm that wrecked all of the Turkish ships, and the war is over, basically. Like, they won. So Cassio enters, followed by like Desdemona and Iago and Emilia. And we know that Cassio and Desdemona are basically friends, right? They've known each other for a bit. Then Othello arrives. They thought that he was lost at sea because their ships got separated, Cassio and Othello's. So there's just the whole reunion then. So with the war being over, then there's a nice party that night, right? There's a nice feast and a bonfire.
Yes.
Yeah. This is when we first get to see a little bit more of Cassio. So Iago's trying to get Cassio to basically start a fight with Rodrigo, or, well, he's trying to get Rodrigo to start a fight with Cassio, to get Cassio kicked out, lose his position, and lose his grace with Othello.
Are we, obviously Iago has the plan we just talked about for Rodrigo, which he's no intention of helping him with, really, but he also has the plan for himself to get Cassio kicked out, and obviously his whole plan really is to create this idea that, to convince Othello that Cassio is trying to get with Desdemona. Do we think that Rodrigo is aware of this other plan, or he's completely clueless?
I don't think it's ever really brought up with Rodrigo, and I don't entirely know what Rodrigo... Oh, is Iago telling Rodrigo that Cassio is trying to get Desdemona as well, and so Rodrigo needs to get rid of Cassio?
I think, yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering. Like, is that obvious from the start? Like, at what point is Rodrigo kind of aware of that? I guess not every detail needs to be. Like,
yeah, I think that might have been on the ship there or something.
Yeah.
Because there is a bit of time that passes between Act 1 and Act 2. I did find in my notes, though, another reason Iago might actually hate Othello and Cassio. He does mention a couple times, and might be hard to pick up on, that maybe both of them slept with his wife. Like,
right, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, so he's somehow persuaded himself to think that Emilia has slept with other men.
Wow, okay.
Even though it's not true, at least that's what it seems to, from Emilia's point of view.
And again, he doesn't treat Emilia all that well. Not that he's really all that. I mean, he's mean to her, and he uses her, and you know, I don't think that he's like, you know, there's no implication that, you know, like, beats her or anything like that, like anything horrendous. But he's still
verbal
not
abuse. Like, that's,
yeah,
for sure.
He's still not a good husband at all. And I do like Emilia. I do feel for her to an extent, but. We do as well at the beginning of Act Two. We meet the governor, Montano. He's not really important, really, is he?
No, I can't think of anything that he does to really drive the story forward.
Not really, but you know, he's the governor, so I assumed he was, you know, an authority figure. But he almost listens to Othello in the, like, you know, he doesn't feel like he's above Othello as the general, actually.
Yeah. Like, so during the party, so what is it? Like, yeah, Iago talks to Cassio, trying to get him drunk. And then he turns to Montano saying, like, yeah, Cassio is this real terrible guy, such a drunk as well. Sends Rodrigo after Cassio. Cassio comes in fighting Rodrigo. And for some reason, people think Rodrigo is some real, I don't know, like some rich guy from Cyprus. And during this fight, Montano steps in, gets hurt. He even says mortally wounded, but he's not. He comes in later in the play. Sure. Then, yeah, Othello bursts in because he left because he was going to consummate his marriage with his wife. They go to sleep. So he's real angry because you interrupted all that. And he berates Montano and Cassio.
Like, yeah, he does.
Just coming in and saying to the governor, like, hey, what the hell do you think you're doing? You're making too much noise. You're partying too much. Stop it.
Yeah. And this is one of the first times where we really see how cruel Iago can be, because he figures out that Cassio is on, you know, guard duty or whatever. And Cassio, he says, like, have a drink. And Cassio says, like, I shouldn't, I'm working. And obviously it's a party. And Cassio says, look, I did already have one. So, like, that's it, you know. And then Iago persuades him to have another. And he's really, really good at this, like, so friendly and charming to your face. And then he has all these ulterior motives, you know. I think that the character is excellent. You know, I really like how friendly and chummy he is. And he's telling you to do the things. And then later it's like, oh, well, you did those bad things. And it's like, yep. He's the one who told me to do them. You know?
Yep.
He's great at that.
But I mean, that would never work with, like, talking to your boss, like telling Othello, like, but he told me to have another drink. Like, no, you're the one who acted out of line.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's just funny that Iago's obviously expecting that. And it's, he's a very mean chap because he's putting it all in motion, you know, and he's funny to that extent. He's also the perfect movie villain. Like, he explains in detail, in big speeches, you know, everything he's doing.
Yes.
Like, I wonder, even here, like in Act Two, you know, he's talking to Cassio, and then we get, if I can fasten but one cup upon him with that which he has drunk, and it goes on for about 10 or 12 lines where he lays out his plot. You know, he does this a lot of times. I love it.
Yeah. I wonder if it'd be kind of an interesting movie just to see it through from, like, the other character's perspective, get to the end, and then finally go back to see everything from Iago's perspective and what he did to make everything happen.
Ooh, that could be, yeah, that could be quite interesting. I like that idea. Iago's such a special character. I really like it. I think he's one of the most memorable Shakespeare characters. Oh, yeah, no, he's not a good chap.
Throughout most of this, does he do anything illegal? Immoral, yes.
Yeah, lots of moral issues. No, he doesn't really. I mean, well, you could say that he swindles Rodrigo, but again, Rodrigo's freely giving him those things. I mean, he's just a bit of fraud, maybe, with his intentions, you know. But no, in general, I think you could easily look at it and say Iago doesn't do a lot himself. All he really does is talk to people and get other people to do things, really.
Yeah. I mean, he does kill a character later on, so I mean, he's
well, okay, sure, but for much of the play, you know, he uses his wits and his tongue. You know, that's his main weapon.
So what happens next?
Yeah, I'm just checking now what happens after we kind of meet Cassio. So Act 2, Scene 1, we've covered now. Act 2, Scene 2 is just one paragraph from a Herald.
Yeah, and we've covered most of Scene 3. So Iago persuades Cassio.
Yeah, we've more or less, I think we've more or less covered all of Act 2 there, really.
Yeah, I mean, we do know that, Cassio was fired, and Iago says to Cassio, like, hey, like, you should talk to Othello about this. And Cassio, I think, says, like, I'm not so sure about that. So they end up saying, like, all right, let's talk to Desdemona. She'll be able to do something kind of like with Measure for Measure again. You can't say no to a woman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a whole night that all of this is happening. Cassio's still drunk, and he then meets with Emilia in Act 3, Scene 1, right? So he does hear a little bit that Desdemona has already been fighting for him before he even shows up. And Othello, of course, wants to take back Cassio. He likes the guy. They've been friends for a while. He's the one who helped him get married, right? But it's just not really possible within just the eye of, like, the governor and just being in the public eye, I guess.
Yeah, like, that's there is that trickiness. I mean, Act 3, Scene 1 is the scene I don't really care a lot for because it's the scene with the climb.
Oh, yeah, I didn't write anything down about that.
Yeah, you skip. So we were starting from scene two, essentially. Like, there's just a scene with the clown.
Scene two is just Othello goes for a walk.
Oh, yes, sorry. Scene two is about six lines. So we start really from scene three. So Act 3 goes in quite quickly here. Like,
yeah. Cassio tries to meet Desdemona one-on-one, and then he finally meets her in scene three, and she says, yeah, of course, I promise to help you.
Yeah, so essentially we start Act 3 from scene three, because Acts 1 and 2 are nonsense. So, well, it's not fair to say they're nonsense, but they're irrelevant, essentially.
Yeah, basically. I don't have anything else written down about them. The clown's kind of funny, but he just does what a clown does. He just takes your words and then twists them to make them slightly different.
Yeah, and the clown returns again at the beginning of scene four, talking to Desdemona. But this is really a two-scene act. You know, it's scene three, and once we skip the start with the clown, then the rest of scene four. This is where events actually happen. Is this filler? Like, there's some filler in this act, really. Like,
there kind of is. Yeah.
There's some stuff we could lose, but... Do you want to tell us what happens anyway in sort of the plot, which is scenes three and four?
Yeah, so basically what happens, Cassio talks to Desdemona, she promises she'll help. He leaves, and Othello actually sees Cassio leave Desdemona's room, which already Othello's like, all right, that's kind of weird. I'll keep that in the back of my mind.
He slinks off, like, suspiciously, I think, is implied, you know.
So he says Yeah, that's a weird way to leave. When you, like, leave and try to say, hi, boss, even when you feel bad about what happened, about being fired.
I think he just trusts Desdemona. He's like, you know, I'm not going to say anything to Othello. Desdemona has told me that she'll put in a good word for me and get me my job back. So, you know, it's easier if I just leave it to her. But it is suspicious that he sneaks away. Of course, he thought nothing of it because he didn't know Iago was doing this plot, you know, but... It just lends itself beautifully to what Iago is trying to do, you know, because then Othello is like, is that not Cassio sneaking away? And then that's a perfect chance for Iago to, like, put his bit in, you know.
And Iago does a really good job with not being so obvious about his motivation here. Like, he's like, oh, no, it couldn't have been. Or, like, oh, I really don't believe this, but there is,
I think, throughout the play. Yeah, throughout the play, he's good like that.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very intelligently written character. He never seems obvious about what he's doing to the other characters, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But to us, sure. But
yeah. And this is the main scene with Iago talking to Othello, sowing these doubts into him, right? So he says, like, oh, yeah, Cassio's a great guy, but I have a few doubts about him. Like, yeah, I used to watch, like, Desdemona and Cassio together and... You know, like, she lied to her father about you. She might be lying to you about him. And Brabantio also warned you about this, right? If she lied to her father. But I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. The one place I think the play suffers is when Othello and Desdemona are interacting, to be honest.
Really?
Because it just isn't how real people talk. Like, you would just explain things. Like, I don't... They have conversations without talking about things somehow, you know?
That's very strange. It is basically just, I love you. You love me. Yay. And that's pretty much all that happens.
Yeah. And then obviously, well, later they have problems, but again, they still don't. Again, I repeat that they could have just solved the whole play if it had a normal human conversation between Othello and Desdemona and maybe Cassio.
Half of Shakespeare's plays.
I suppose it is, but just this play I really enjoyed, but just when it's Othello and Desdemona one-on-one, that's the bits where it feels more like theater than real, you know?
Sure, sure. Something that would hold up even better over time.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And we have here, so in scene three, Desdemona is trying to put her good word in for Cassio after he leaves. So, I mean, Othello's just seen Cassio sneak away, and now immediately, you know, Desdemona is like, let's talk to Cassio, let's get Cassio around for dinner, let's, you know, let's fix this. And in Othello's like, yeah, like, sure, I'll do anything for you, basically. Like, you know, in that sense, he's devoted.
Not now.
But not now, yeah.
Yeah.
And she pushes it. She's like, oh, but soon, right? Tonight? Tomorrow? The next day? Like, she's really
Tuesday,
pushing it.
Wednesday? Yeah. And like, he does respect her throughout all of this. They're still on good terms. But yeah, the seeds of doubt are just being sown.
Yeah, and eventually Othello says, like, fine, let him come when he will. Like, whatever. He starts out, like, quite a good husband, I think. Like, he's willing to do what she wants. He gets really suspicious soon, but at this point, he's all right, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's real interesting to see it acted out, like, as this military man, you imagine this strong general throughout most of this, like, you can see it. You can see, like, he is very strong, but also warm.
He's loving, I think.
Yeah, but very loving.
Desdemona does herself no favors, because even when he admits and says, fine, like, let Cassio come, whatever, and she's like, why, this is not a boon, like, you're not doing me a favor by saying this, like, this is like if I told you to wear your gloves, like, Cassio is something that you need and you should just have him, like, she's like, okay, quit while you're ahead.
yeah does push it a little too far. And so this is when the main action happens. So Othello mentions that he has a headache, right? And she takes out her handkerchief, tries to help him, but it falls to the floor. And somehow they don't realize that it's...
Yeah.
So Emilia picks it up, knowing that it's important to them. And Iago's been asking for it for forever.
Yes. Now, right? This is the bit that where I don't like Emilia. I do like her later, but her first appearance, essentially, I don't like her because, you know, she's like, well, she's dropped this handkerchief. I know it means a lot to her, but my husband's always been after it. I'll give it to my husband. And that didn't really sit well with me just on the first kind of reading. I'm like, maybe you should just give it back to your friend, you know?
Yeah.
And for that reason, I was like, I know that she's not in on Iago. I mean, this is the first time we meet her, so we're not fully aware of how much she's in on, but you kind of assume, okay, she's not in on Iago's plots per se, but she still kind of goes along with this handkerchief business. And if she hadn't done that, things would have taken a different turn in the play.
Yeah, yeah. It's... and we don't know why she does it either. Just being a good wife, I guess?
Just being a good submissive wife, essentially. And that's a characterization that I'm not a massive fan of, but,
agreed.
You know, that's what happens.
So Iago, of course, is like, oh, great, now I can give this to Cassio. And if Othello sees Cassio with this, he's going to think Desdemona's been cheating. Because, of course, giving handkerchief to someone means that you're cheating. Is that true? Like 400 years ago?
I mean, like, I'm always giving handkerchiefs. No. I assume that it's just the fact that he has it. It's like, well, why would he have it? Did she give it to him as a token? Or they find it in his house, so maybe she was around his house. Like, what were they doing? I don't know. Like, it's hardly conclusive evidence, but it... You know, once Iago does all of his talking and plants the suspicions, it just adds something, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And Othello, of course, then comes in very bothered by what Iago was saying earlier, because he's like, all right, yeah, maybe she is cheating. And he said, like, all right, I'll take any evidence for this. Like, what is there? Iago mentions, like, well, you could just watch them having sex, maybe go into the cabinet or whatever.
Iago's he's very good at planting seeds and saying things that the other characters then almost just assume to be true, you know. But again, it's because they think that Othello constantly calls him Honest Iago. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, there's no reason to distrust this guy, which I find a bit unbelievable, you know, if this is how he is. But yeah.
But then, of course, Othello's like, no, let's not do that. Do you have any other evidence that's not going to, like, break my heart completely?
Yeah. So at this point, Othello's rational enough, as you say, he does still want some evidence, you know.
Yeah, but he's still okay with circumstantial evidence. I think he even says that specifically. And Iago's like, yeah, well, I saw Cassio with the handkerchief. And he also talked in his sleep about Desdemona. And I don't remember if it's this part or later, but he's also...
It gets weird here. It's right here, isn't it?
It's later in the play. I think that he says that Cassio was talking in his sleep and kissed me and hugged me, saying, sweet Desdemona.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, that was... Iago was pushing it there. Like, that. I'm surprised Othello went for that. That sounded almost too silly to, you know... Like, I don't know. Right? Is it a bit too much for me?
Oh, agreed. And so Othello believes it completely, says, all right, we're going to have to kill Cassio now. And I'm going to have to kill my wife. Like, all right...
This is where Othello loses me. Yeah, I understand, you know, you can forgive a certain amount because he's being manipulated here.
Yeah.
But then he's just like, okay, then all the people need to die.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that was a big step to jump to.
And Iago gets promised his promotion. So why does Iago keep going? Like,
yeah, I don't know. He loses his motivation at this point. Yeah.
Except, well, no.
Well, I kind of, like, I wasn't really that convinced on the promotion being his motivation. I just think he's a bad fellow, you know, and he just enjoys this kind of stuff.
And that might be part of it. If that were his motivation, like, I just like watching the world burn, that would have been fine. I would have believed that much more than, I want a promotion.
But they needed the promotion because if his only motivation is, like, it's just his character type, then how did he get this reputation for being so trustworthy in the first place? You know, that wouldn't be consistent then. Well, I guess, yeah.
Well, he already is, I guess.
I think the promotion is there to give him, like, a tangible motivation, because otherwise it just makes his character a bit inconsistent. You know, if you're like, well, his motivation is just he's a bad fellow, but everyone thinks he's a really good fellow. It's like, well, how?
Well, yeah, he's not a bad fellow, he's Othello. Sorry. Anyways, so Othello comes in, you see, like, Desdemona talking or looking for Cassio. Emilia lies about the handkerchief as well, so we already see strike two against her. But Othello comes in saying he has a cold and he wants to see the handkerchief that he gave her, and makes up this insane story, like, yeah, this is a magical handkerchief that my parents had and it's been with me for years.
Was that true? Do you think he made that up?
I think it's made up. Right.
I just bought it. I don't know. I thought it was true, but
so
it doesn't really matter. But yeah, he makes the handkerchief seem really important, essentially. And
so she doesn't have it, of course. And then she's like,
she doesn't say scared. Yeah. Again, they lack conversation. If you just said, like, oh, yes, I had it last time when I was, like, mopping your brow or whatever, and I guess I haven't seen it since. I must have dropped it.
Yes.
But she just puts him off really suspiciously, you know.
And Emilia could have said, like, hey, I found it and gave it to Iago.
Yeah, and, well, she doesn't say that. Just the conversation sometimes lets the play down a little bit, but,
I think that is Shakespeare in general. Like, that's the part that you really have to suspend your disbelief. And once you do that, it's a fantastic play. And I think both of us were able to do that throughout.
Yeah, look, I do love the play. I do want to say one thing on Othello's defense as well. There's a bit where we said he asks Iago for evidence, but, you know, he says, like, you know, you need to prove this to me, or, and he calls him a villain, and, you know, you must prove that my love is a whore, you know, or you'll face my wrath, basically. You know, you're slandering her and torturing me. And he does threaten him. So at this point, he's not completely, you know, bought over.
Well, in Act 3, Scene 3, but in Act 3, Scene 4, he's real cold to her.
Like, he does become, he becomes almost, like, very quickly, like, he turns, like, he gets really cold with her, and she's not helping herself by constantly talking about Cassio and things like that. But, you know, and the handkerchief, obviously, I think he turns, like, really quickly on her. Like,
to an extent, I think that this it really depends on the actor playing Othello, because I've seen it done correctly. You just have to get there in a believable way. And it's just, it's a real hard character to be.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Iago would be fun to play. I think Othello would be slightly more difficult because you've got to show that, why does he kind of go crazy at the end, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so she doesn't have the handkerchief and he gets jealous and leaves. Then, but, well, no, sorry. Desdemona does say, like, oh, you're here. I need to talk about Cassio again. Then he gets jealous and leaves. Like, all right, Desdemona, how many times have we done this now?
That is her only thing. It's like, let's talk about Cassio again. Like, that's all she's got.
It is. And then Iago's like, all right, I'll talk to Othello about this. And yeah, it's all just kind of the same drama. I think the only other new thing that really happens here is Bianca finally enters the scene. So that's Cassio's mistress. And
yeah, you're right. A lot of it is more or less the same. She's the only real, you know, addition here.
Yeah. And so Cassio had found the handkerchief in his room and gives it to Bianca for her to, like, copy it, like copy the engraving, but yeah.
To do something with it anyway. Bianca's kind of, well, first of all, she's not needed in the play. She doesn't add anything, but she's kind of a strong character in that sense, that she's kind of like, well, I know what I want from Cassio, and he tells her to go do this, and she's kind of like, why would I know? Like, you know, she initially, I think, kind of goes along with it, and she's kind of like, actually, no, like, why, you know, I'm not your slave, you know? I like that about her.
Yeah, and Cassio, I don't know why he does it, but he just says, like, oh, I don't want you to be around. And okay, because I guess she is a prostitute and his mistress, he wants to save face here.
Is she a prostitute? I mean, I know she's his mistress, and one of the other girls says that she's a prostitute, but I wasn't sure if she was.
She might not be. I thought she was, but kind of with the way the play is written at times, you never really know.
Yeah. I just thought she was essentially Cassio's unofficial girlfriend. You know, but then she does want him around, and she asked him, like, you know, you can come around today, tomorrow, whatever, like the option's still there for you, essentially. So she's strong with, she want, you know, I think that they're almost using each other in a sense, but maybe there's some, I didn't think that she was a prostitute, but it's certainly consistent with the play. Like, there's no reason to think she's not either, you know.
Yeah, but again, if Othello had seen them together, he might have thought, oh, this is who Cassio's with. He's not trying to be with Desdemona. He's trying to be with Bianca.
Yeah, because I guess Othello doesn't know about Bianca, or at least doesn't see them together. So if he did know, he assumes that it's not still ongoing. I don't know. But yeah, maybe that's why this is here. Because, you know, Bianca doesn't add much. Maybe it's just one of those other almost comedic twists that it's like, oh, if only Othello had seen that scene, we could have avoided a lot of stuff. But he didn't, you know.
Yeah. And now we're ready for Act 4.
I think we are ready. And again, we passed over it, but there's a little bit more silly stuff with the Klein in that scene at the beginning. Yeah, so now move. Yeah, the Klein's irrelevant. Now move to Act 4.
So I think this is when...
This is where we have Othello and Iago doing a lot of dialogue to begin with. And...
This is when Iago says, like, oh, yeah, Cassio kissed me, right?
Yeah.
Saying, sweet Desdemona. And, okay, so yeah. This is when Cassio comes in, and Iago tricks Cassio into talking about Bianca by mentioning Bianca and Desdemona in the same conversation. Othello doesn't know who Bianca is, so he assumes that Cassio is going to be talking about Desdemona the entire time.
Yeah.
Othello hides.
We have this, Iago's very good here because he talks about an unauthorized kiss and all this kind of stuff, to kiss in private, but he's very good at, like, saying things with no evidence for them, and then Othello just goes along with it, and he's like, well, is it bad to be in bed with her friends naked for an hour and not mean any harm? And it's like, well, that would be bad, but that didn't happen.
yes. And saying, like, there's no way that they would just do nothing.
Yeah, right? He creates these like suppositions where Othello, you know, he's very good at planting a seed and then building on it. Yeah. So that even if you question how he's building on it, you've forgotten to question like the initial supposition. He's very good at that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So he gets Cassio to talk about Bianca and all the things that he loves about her, or like the kissing and things like that. Othello thinks it's about Desdemona, which makes him even angrier. But what's kind of weird is Bianca enters this scene, right?
Yeah.
Now, she does bring in the handkerchief and throws it at Cassio, saying like, hey, why'd you want me to copy this embroidery? So Othello's like, oh, he has this, and he's trying to give it to his mistress.
Yeah, at this point, so because this breaks my previous point, which was that, you know, Othello wasn't aware of the situation with Bianca. Now we see that he is aware of it, but he's so blinded by the handkerchief that he's like not processing that Cassio is still with her, I guess.
He may think that he has two women or something, or he still doesn't know who Bianca is. Maybe it's just some random woman who copies embroidery. I don't know. But what happens is Bianca leaves and Cassio chases after her. So I feel like if I'm Othello, I would be like, all right, maybe this guy loves this woman, not Desdemona. But I guess with that green-eyed monster, maybe I wouldn't think that far.
I think the jealousy is too much at this point, that he's not really necessarily taking every detail like sensibly, you know? I guess that's understandable. He also has like a fit of epilepsy at one point, doesn't he? Or they mention it, that he'd... Iago and Cassio talk about it. It's not really important, but it does get mentioned here. Cassio says, what's the matter? And Iago says, my lord's fallen into an epilepsy. This is his second fit. He had one yesterday. I don't know if that's... like, doesn't achieve anything, really?
I wonder if that's just not literal, that... Oh, I have no idea.
It's a weird mention, essentially. Like, it doesn't do a lot.
Saying that's why he's not around, maybe?
Yeah, and, you know, Cassio says, well, rub him about the temples and whatever, and then Othello goes on and says that Iago's mocking him. I guess maybe he's using it to cover up why Othello's acting so strangely. Like, maybe it's not epilepsy. Maybe he's just, you know, he's really jealous and angry, and they're... I don't know. He's having a fit of anger
instead of an epileptic fit or something.
Yeah, that's very, very possible. It's not...
That does sound it's not like a Shakespearean thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it's not important. It's just a detail, you know?
Yeah. So Iago then, like, all right, you could have thought that he loves Bianca, but Iago then says maybe he gave Desdemona's handkerchief to his whore Bianca. And so Othello's like, oh, how could he do something so terrible? And they plan to strangle Desdemona in bed.
Yeah, so this is where Othello loses me, morally speaking.
Really? This place? Okay.
Well, this is where the character of Othello loses me. This is where I no longer, like, it's just, that's too much.
I understand, like, the poetry that he's going for here. Like, he wants to kill her in the bed that she sullied with Cassio. Like, okay. Yes. Poetically, makes sense. Then later on in Act 5, he mentions, like, oh, I could never, like, put... like, let there be blood on this. Like, I don't want to damage her face. I don't want to see any blood. I'm just going to strangle her.
He still wants to kill her.
Her beauty forever. Which, all right.
Demented, it wouldn't. But this is the problem I have between Othello and Desdemona. Like, if they just talk, you know, I understand that he's listening to Iago. I understand maybe he's getting angry. And sure, like, he should just talk to her. But would you take the rash step of killing her? Without talking to her first, like, because she didn't do anything, and you know, he just goes on hearsay, and it's like, well, I gotta kill her then.
Yep.
But well, yeah, I that's guess... just
men.
Yeah, like men.
Yeah. So it, she tries to talk to him about it. And he just never believes her. But I think that only happens here in Act 4 and Act 5. So
she doesn't even try very hard, you know. And even when he's like, I'm going to kill her, she's just like, oh, well, okay then. Like, I get, you know.
If I have to die, I have to die. But
like, she doesn't put up a fight. Like, if she put up a fight, it would have been more believable. Because now she seems culpable. She's like, "Well, I'll take my medicine. Like, if I did wrong, I should have to die." You know, it's like, "Well, you didn't." Like, yeah, you're forgetting to protest your own innocence here.
It reminds me of Claudio again for Measure for Measure, because he's like, "Well, I guess I have to die. God judged me this way, and my husband is my God." So,
yeah.
That sucks.
I get very upset with, so we Lodovico arrives, and at this point we just have like some look, I guess this is where they, you know, the officials essentially see that Othello is losing it a little bit, and you know they don't really want to let him stay in charge, and he strikes his wife in front of like another man. Like, that is really not good. But he's angry, and yeah, he just hits her.
Yeah. And I think everything has just piled up here, because in this scene, we also see Othello get a letter. And in the letter, it says that Cassio is going to get the job as governor instead of him. Now, obviously not the main thing on his mind. Mm. He is still not happy with Cassio being there. And Desdemona saying, "Oh, I'm happy for you, Cassio." And he's like, "Why the hell are you happy for him?"
She does herself no favors. She's not smart enough to figure out what's going on sometimes. But
then in the background, basically, yeah, you have, what is it, Lodovico and Iago?
Lodovico's there. Yeah.
And Iago's just like, yeah, this is just kind of what he gets like at times.
Yeah. As though he didn't cause it all, you know. But
there are so many things I see in Measure for Measure with this, because the Duke, when he was a friar, his name was Lodowick. Right,
it was very similar. Like, it was Lodovico. Yeah,
and in this, they do mention Signor Angelo at some point.
Mm, I think you're right. Yeah,
and I had to look into it. So he wrote Measure for Measure a year after this play. It came out at least a year later, so it was done about the same time. So I'm wondering if he's just taking like the same names.
It'd be like they're next to each other in my collection, so they did happen around the same time. So that makes sense.
It'd be funny if they were the same people, though.
It would be. We can write some fan fiction with crossover kind of work. But yeah, so here's the thing. So she says, "I'm glad to see you mad. Why, sweet Othello?" And he just devil and strikes her. And Lodovico says, "Like, this would not be believed in Venice. Like, they really have a lot of respect for Othello." And he's like, we would never believe that you're doing things like this. Like, he just struck your wife in front of me. And he just continues calling her, "Oh, devil, devil. If that the earth could teem with woman's tears, each drop she falls would prove a crocodile." Like, but he doesn't know any of this to be true. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And throughout, like, he's telling other people how bad she is. And it's like, but you haven't seen her do anything bad yet. You've just been told.
And throughout the rest of the play, everyone's like, "What the hell are you talking about, Othello?"
Yeah.
And he just... and believes it so strongly the rest of the time.
He's essentially, well, it's maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but he's essentially insane for the rest of the play. Like, he just loses it.
Yeah. So he, in 4-2, he accuses Desdemona to her face, basically, and she doesn't entirely understand, but as the audience, of course, is like, "All right, so he's just saying you're a whore now. Great." And so she's basically locked in her room after dinner, and Emilia, finally being the smart one, she's like, "Okay, someone's got to be lying to Othello. Who could it be? It's definitely not any of us, not Iago or Desdemona, but yeah, something's got to be going on."
She's loyal to her husband as well, you know, and she's loyal to Desdemona as well. So I think Emilia is in a tricky situation, really.
I think she's more loyal to Desdemona than Iago.
Probably. I think in the end, you know, but I think she maybe has some inner difficulties here. And to be honest, like, she's not a major character. We don't really get to see all that much of it, but I think that you could have expanded on her, actually, because this is a difficult situation for her, you know?
Yeah. And so we see Rodrigo complaining again. Like, he did it right after he was beaten up by Cassio, saying, "I have no money." Now he says, "I still have no money. And what the hell happened to the jewels that I gave you that Desdemona was supposed to get?"
Yeah. So, well, just before that, I do want to mention one last thing about the Othello-Desdemona speech.
because he really, really like insults her. Like, he's really horrible with her. He keeps calling her a whore and all this kind of stuff. But
okay, yeah, for
his interaction is hilarious because she's like, "By heaven, you do me wrong." He's like, "What? Are you not a strumpet?" And she's like, "No, I'm not." He's like, "What? Not a whore?" Like, "No, I'm not." He's just like, "Oh, okay." Like, that's as if it was assumed. Like, "What? You're not a whore?" Like, everyone knows this about you, you know. But yeah, so that I find that funny. But then we move on to the Rodrigo and Iago, as you say.
Yes, and I don't follow this so much. So Iago keeps the ruse going with Rodrigo, and they plan to kill Cassio to somehow get Rodrigo to have sex with Desdemona. That's what I don't follow. Why would they?
I think Iago basically, so it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think Iago just kind of realizes, like, oh no, I forgot I had this other plot as well, and now everything's like coming back to me. I've got to do something. I think he's really hoping that Cassio and Rodrigo just both kill each other, and then he's like, that's some mouths closed, like that's some evidence gone, loose ends tied up, essentially.
Completely understand from Iago's side, because Rodrigo, he's just gonna cost him, and Cassio, he needs to get rid of him as well. I just don't understand why Rodrigo would want to help.
I think Rodrigo was just a fool, really. He's like, take all my money, and then he's like, well, now you've got to kill this guy. Oh, well, if I have to, you know.
Yeah. And that's basically everything until the beginning of Act 5.
Yeah.
Desdemona gets ready for bed. Then.
Yeah, did we mention Emilia? We do have we mentioned her briefly, but just kind of wanted to add on that. Like, we do see her trying to put a good word in for Desdemona with Othello, like, I think a little bit. But then we have this bit right at the end of Act 4 where she can hear, like, Desdemona's locked in the room, and, you know, Othello's she's like, what's this noise? Like, why is she crying in there or whatever, you know? So just to kind of mention that, but we do see that just at the very, very end of Act 4. And then we're on to Act 5.
Yeah. Emilia's starting to become more of a main character throughout Act 4 and Act 5.
Yeah. She's received a promotion. She's on the main billing now.
Yeah. So we start off Act 5 with, the Iago's plan. So Rodrigo swipes at Cassio. Cassio was wearing armor, and so he stabs Rodrigo, while Iago then sneakily stabs Cassio in the leg. Cassio is then on the ground, can't do anything, and Rodrigo sort of gets away. Othello shows up after Iago exits, and he sees Cassio. He's like, great, Iago did his job. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Now, Othello's like, all right, now all I have to do is kill Desdemona. And he says a bit of a hint at the ending of the play. Says, strumpet, I come. Forth of my heart those charms. Thine eyes are blotted. Thy bed, lust-stained, shall with lust's blood be spotted.
Yes, I had circled that quote as well.
I'm glad.
That was going on Instagram, I think.
It is a really good quote. So yeah, in this scene, it gets a little confusing because people enter, people leave. It's kind of hard to figure out who's where.
Yeah, because we've got Lodovico. We now have Graciano as well. And I just saw those guys as, you know, there's some other officials kind of here realize, just to see Othello's madness, essentially. Like, they're not really important in themselves.
Yeah, they show up. Iago appears again. And Cassio says that Rodrigo, and who's just so pathetic throughout a lot of this, he was the attacker. So Iago stabs Rodrigo, but nobody sees this. Nobody sees, like, Rodrigo be stabbed.
Yeah.
So I don't really know the perspectives on the stage at this point, how that's supposed to be done. But yeah, Cassio, still alive throughout all this. He doesn't die, spoilers. He does beg for help. Bianca enters the scene, and he's carried away safely.
Yes. Yeah. Rodrigo is just, my God, like, at one point he's calling for help and he's like, what? Nobody come? Then I shall bleed to death. Like, well, that's, you know, there we go. I tried, you know, like,
fine. Everyone everyone looking at Rodrigo says, man, this guy is pathetic.
He is pathetic. But Iago's, because you're right, Iago, you know, is like, right, this is my chance now. And I think, I don't know, they might have seen Iago kill him. Maybe. Again, it depends on like how they set up the stage. It's not really clear, but I think that he's kind of, he's working on the assumption that Percasio has been hurt by this bad guy, Rodrigo. I'll just finish him off here. You know, so he's like, what? You murderous slave, you villain, and stabs Rodrigo. And maybe they didn't see it. Maybe they did. I don't know. But it's more just like, you know, you kill men in the dark, you know, bloody thieves, and I'll take care of this one. I've done a good deed. I've rid us of this villain, who, of course, he had set on in the first place.
I think they mention in the play that he comes in basically just his nightgown with a candle or something. Like, it's strange it's a strange scene to imagine, but I bet watching it would be better. So,
yeah.
Then some.
Now we move on. We have an interaction next, I think, this is where we have Othello and Emilia talking, and she explains that murder has been done, and it's Rodrigo. And he's like, what? Rodrigo killed? And Cassio? And she's like, no, no, Cassio's not killed. And he's kind of like, well, then murder is out of tune. This is not how it was meant to go. We were definitely planning a different murder.
Yeah. Iago makes it sound like Cassio was killed, and for some reason, Bianca was arrested. I think, yeah, they do say that she was arrested for being a prostitute. Something like that. Anyway, I don't think that's really important. So, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I think that's pretty much everything in Act 5, Scene 1.
Yeah, I think so. We all have, right. How much more or less.
5-2 do we want to get into?
Because
this is the last scene.
This is the last scene. Oh, let's do it. Like we spoiled right. The last one. Right. PJ's not here, so he doesn't need to know that we spoiled it.
PJ, if you're listening, you can just stop the recording here. That's fine.
Well, see, the good thing is, look, we like to talk about these, but the reason we don't usually spoil the last scene or the last acts because, you know, anyone listening who's using it like as an educational resource or whatever, like, you should still read the play yourself. It's very important that you do that. Yeah. So that's why you've got to read it to get the ending. But let's do it. We're fine.
Cool. So Othello walks in, candle in hand as well, and he just talks himself into killing Desdemona. Like, I feel like his relationship with her, though, is not as strong as her relationship with him, because basically he's just like, it's going to be hard to kill you because you're beautiful. Nothing else really about her. Like, maybe real kind and nice, but kindness isn't a personality trait. Anyway.
Yeah. It's sad and it's difficult, and she's just too accepting of her fate. And yeah. And
yeah.
Kills her. That's...
And so, yeah, he wakes her up and asks her to confess any sins that she has. And she says, I didn't do anything wrong. It's like, well, Cassio confessed to having sex with you. She's like, really? Did you hear that from him? It's like, no. But then he says, because he still believes that Cassio is dead.
My God, man, at this point, like, have a conversation. You're literally about to kill her.
Yeah.
And she's like, did you hear that from him? No. Like, why doesn't he say Iago told me? And she's like, well, it's not true. Like, talk to each other.
That does not come up until Othello talks with Emilia. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then they have finally a real conversation, but with Emilia. Then they talk like real people and they explain what's happened. But
Emilia comes in right after Desdemona's been smothered. She's just about to die and tells Emilia that she loves Othello still, and she died herself somehow.
This is weird because, yeah, we think she's dead, but then no, she pops up and says her last line and then dies. But that's not how smothering works. Like, if he stabs her, that would be more plausible. You know, when you smother someone, you can't go away and then they still die like a minute or two later. I don't think that's how that works.
It's the movie way of doing it. You see it in movies, I feel.
Yeah. They get that kind of dramatic last line and then she dies, you know. But well, look, that I find that unrealistic, but at this point I was enjoying the play too much. We're near the end. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna let that go, you know.
And Othello then says, like, Iago told me all of this, and Emilia finally puts all the pieces together and she's like, all right, Iago, Gratiano, Montano, who's still somehow alive, get in here. And
yeah. So, there's a little quote I like where Emilia says to Othello, do thy worst, this deed of thine is no more worthy heaven than thou wast worthy her. You know, so she tells him to his face, you know, you're not worthy of Desdemona. Like, she was, you know, her good friend, so that's understandable. But, you know, she tells him to his face, basically, you're trash.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see if I can find this part. I really like Othello and Emilia's discussion, saying, Cassio did top her, ask thy husband else. Oh, I were damned beneath all depth in hell, but that I did proceed upon grounds to this extremity, thy husband knew it all. My husband, thy husband, that she was false to wedlock. And then she just keeps going.
She just, like, keeps saying, my husband.
My husband. And I, 'twas he that told me on her first. An honest man he is and hates the slime. Like, my husband?
So it's like she just can't believe. Like, no one can believe that Iago is not a good fellow here. Like,
yeah.
Like, so, what?
And then you just hear Othello snap, and he's like, yes, do you not understand me, woman?
Yeah. It's around here, I think, that Graciano mentions just casually that Desdemona's dad also died of grief.
Said in passing. It's like, all right, nobody cares now.
It's like, I'm this glad really her... important. Yeah, it's like, she's dead, and I'm glad her poor dad's not here to see it, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. So Emilia hears about the handkerchief being mentioned as evidence, and she says that Iago got it from me, and I found it lying on the ground.
Yes, finally, people talk about the things that have happened.
In the tragedies, it's always too late. Yeah. So Othello runs at Iago and as Iago stabs Emilia.
Yeah, he calls Emilia. She explains what happens. He begged me to steal the handkerchief, and he just shouts villainous horror at her.
Yeah.
And then, and I like this in the play, the way the stage direction says, Iago offers to stab his wife. I don't know why that cracked me up for like a good 30 seconds.
Can I, please?
So you want to start? No.
So, yeah, Iago runs away. Othello laments all of his decisions here. And Iago was finally captured. So Othello runs up at him, stabs him with a sword. They take the sword away from him, and Othello admits to him planning Cassio's death, while Cassio, I believe, is also in the room. I can't remember. And so all of this has come to light, but...
Yeah, they just have essentially a long dialogue where they finally just talk about everything that's happened, and now everyone knows everything, basically.
But what's interesting is, I don't know, I might have misspoken, but yeah, Iago wasn't killed in this.
No, so Othello wounds him. He tries to kill him, but he doesn't actually succeed in killing him.
Yeah, and they say he's going to spend life in jail, and he's going to be tortured for most of his life. Or at least draw out his death as much as possible.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
And a lot of Iago questions Othello, and Othello's very open and honest here, and like he says, like, did you, you know, try to get involved in this? And Othello's just like, yeah, here's what happened. Like, I killed Desdemona. I tried to kill Iago just now, which you saw. You know, I messed up.
Yeah. Yep. Completely truthful throughout all of this. And then he has a knife hidden somewhere on him, and he kills himself.
Yes. Yeah, mentions also, as you said, that he plotted in Cassio's death then, and yeah, and then kills him, the suicide.
So you have Emilia, Desdemona, and Othello all dead in that one bed.
I kissed thee ere I killed thee, and killing myself to die upon a kiss. I like the way Shakespeare writes sometimes. It's very nice, very poetic. I don't think that people ever spoke like this, you know. Like, it's very easy maybe for a student now to read this and think like, oh, well, I, you know, people spoke like that 400 years ago. I don't think anyone ever spoke like that.
No, because it's poetry. Nobody speaks like the poems that are written nowadays.
No, that's true. But it's nice, you know, it's good. This is funny, though. Lodovico calls Iago a Spartan dog. Now, I'm a fan of Sparta. Like, that hit me, but, yeah.
Well, they are Italian. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
Yeah. And that's... We're done, aren't we? Like, that's more or less the plot.
Yeah, basically. There is a little bit of a happy ending for Cassio. Like, he gets his governorship.
He gets his promotion, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he's governor of Cyprus or something. And Lodovico's going to go back to Venice.
Montano was the governor of Cyprus, though. Othello was just a war general. I don't understand why Othello was in charge. Montano, like, is submissive to him, and now Cassio's the governor? That's a bit unclear.
Yeah, I don't exactly understand how that works. That would be something to really look into, for other people to look into. Like, what does it mean to be duke or governor in those times?
The dukes seem to be powerful, but this governor seems to be not really important at all.
Well, Othello was supposed to become governor at some point. So it was a promotion from him, from general.
Okay. That makes a bit more sense then.
But if Montano, maybe they were expecting Montano to die? I don't know. Or maybe he had to retire because he was stabbed by Cassio?
Yeah, I don't know. But Cassio, I mean, the politics isn't that important, I guess, but it's just...
Yeah. It's really not. So
that's it. I loved this play. I really, really loved it.
Yeah, I mean, we sound like we've been pretty negative about a lot of this play, sadly. But Iago, to me, he's very much like Edmond Dantès from The Count of Monte Cristo. Mm. Like, it is one of those revenge plots that you really like following him around through most of it. And Othello is a very interesting character throughout a lot of it. Desdemona is... Well, doesn't have a ton of character. She's still very interesting to hear from and see kind of the love that she and Othello share.
Please, everyone, go and listen to the episode of Books Boys where I reviewed Count of Monte Cristo.
Ooh, you did. Ooh, I ought to listen to that as well, because that is my favorite book.
It's up there. I mean, I'm a big fan of all his stuff, like of Dumas' work. I love all the Three Musketeers stuff and everything as well. So yeah, it's a brilliant book. But yeah, look, that's I wanted to just make that point that I love this, because you're right. We sounded critical, and I criticized a little bit the dialogue and motivations and things like that. But it's a really, I mean, I read this in a day. I think I had to finish Act 5 the next morning, but more or less within 24 hours. It's most of it in one sitting. Like, it's a really, really nice. Just, you want to know what's happening. You are addicted to it. The characters are good. Iago is amazing. And it's a really, really good play.
For a lot of these nitpicks, I would say watch it, because a director and an actor can handle these a bit better.
Yeah. They can kind of iron out some of their little flaws, I guess. Yeah.
So, yep, definitely. I mean, plays are meant to be watched, not read.
But that's something we forget with Shakespeare. Like, everyone's reading Shakespeare. You are meant to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's all these nice things I can recommend for plays. That's one of them. The other one is when you read a play, especially if, like, for A-levels, read it front to back, but then also read it back to front.
Ooh.
So by that, I mean, of course you read it front to back all the way through. But when I mean for reading it back to front, you need to figure out how they got from one area in the play to the next, from one action to the next action. So back to front, you need to figure out how did you get here from here?
Yeah. That's
and that's how you can completely understand a play.
Do we think that, you know, looking at this back to front, well, we can see the motivation. It's all Iago's manipulation. Like, it all ties in consistently. I still think that Act 1 was not really, like, bits of it were essentially a prequel. It doesn't really tie in that well, but the rest of it, I think that, you can see a perfect flow from how you get to the end. And I think it's very clear what, you know, Shakespeare wasn't making this up as he went along. I think the end points was pretty much in mind throughout, you know? Yeah.
And if you're an actor and you don't understand the motivation, just ask yourself, how did we get here in the first place? And that can that can hook your character out.
Fun fact, apparently Agatha Christie usually did not know the end. Like, she didn't always know whodone it in her own books. Like, she just kind of wrote as she went along, and then was like, well, and then this guy did it, I guess, you know.
I can see that. I think that was also in your last Books Boys podcast that I forget which author it was, but she was saying that she doesn't know where it's going necessarily. She's going to let the characters take her there. And
yeah. And that's a perfectly fine way to do it. The only flaw with Agatha Christie doing it is that then when they give the explanation, you know, you'd think with a murder mystery, do you pick up on the clues as you go? But you don't, because there weren't sometimes those clues. And then at the end, they'll just throw in evidence like, he was her brother all along. And it's like, well, we could never have known that. So we couldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, that the endings aren't always the best there, but it is all about the journey for a lot of those.
Yeah, it is. And I love her anyway. Well, look, I think we're not here to do Agatha Christie. That's another show. Nope. That's Caper Captains. Let's
wrap it up.
This has
been almost 2 hours, so.
Oh my goodness me. The last one was the longest I'd ever done, and now this is of Playboys, and now this is ridiculously long. I'm going to go look and have breakfast, because goodness me. Well, guys, that is us. Have a Shakespearean day.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.